As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
High in the air, Brito back at the wall, adios, pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 246 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. And Andy, this is an amazing list of Giants legends who have hit 246 over a season. Okay, you have JT Snow did it twice. Lance Niekro did it once. Omar Vizquel did it once. Russ Ortiz did it in 2002. Good for you, Russ. Bob Brenly did it. Brandon Crawford did it in 2014. So that is an actual segue to maybe one of the topics of today. However, there's a lot going on in Giants land right now. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. There's a lot going on and nothing going on since we have postseason baseball flying at us from all angles, and the Giants are not one of those teams. And, you know, people are a little bit salty about that, I think.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed some discontent. I've noticed some folks are not happy. Obviously, there's a manager's office that has been cleared out, and the first order of business now is to find a successor for Gabe Kapler. And we met in the dugout with Farhan Zaidi for about 45 minutes on Tuesday, and a lot of the questions were about that. And a lot of the other questions were just really sort of broad. And, you know, I think people just don't... Usually these sessions are very much, okay, who's hurt? Who's going to have surgery? Mm. Who are your arbitration eligible guys? Give us some thoughts on this position, that position. I mean, it's very nuts and bolts, usually. It would give us your evaluation of different players. And there was some of that. I mean, he did say, Farhan Zaidi did say that they want to give Marco Luciano every chance to be the opening day an everyday shortstop next season, which I thought was interesting. But for the most part, it was just a lot of sort of vague, overarching questions and answers or non-answers about just the state of the organization and how things are going to be different next season. And so, yeah, it was a very different kind of session. And honestly, I don't know if we're really going to start getting some concrete answers until we figure out who they land on as manager, because that's probably going to tell us a lot about where things are going to go from there.
Absolutely. I got that vibe from the post-mortem press conference as well. And I think the format, which you alluded to in your article, had something to do with it. It just, there's something about being up at a podium, and you got Larry Bear to your right, and you got the manager to your left, and a little bit more formal, whereas this is almost like a post-game scrum in a way. So, yeah, not a ton of information, but I think what we're talking about now is just who's going to be the manager, who is going to fill that role. And you did it again, where you heard words that seem innocuous at the time, and then you read between the lines and you come up with this idea. You did it before with Gabe Kapler when Farhan Zaidi said, oh, you know, we might be interested in someone who maybe wasn't successful the first time around, but the second time around they've learned a few things. And you immediately thought of Gabe Kapler, and no one did. No one else did. You did. And now you heard a long time playing career that just ended, and you're not thinking Buster Posey. You're thinking Stephen Vogt. And I think you've done it again. I think that is definitely going to be one of those candidates.
You know, everything that they mentioned, everything that Farhan Zaidi mentioned about how they want the next manager to be an effective recruiter, how they need the next manager to be someone who is relatable and personable and puts people at ease when they walk in a room. I think those are qualities that the next manager is probably going to have. And, you know, it's he also mentioned, you know, having the heartbeat of the clubhouse and knowing that, you know, sort of being connected to how the players are feeling and understanding that the move on paper that may be the right move isn't the right move in reality and isn't going to play well in the clubhouse. And, you know, you need to be reaffirming in the decisions you make and not only put players in the best positions to succeed, you know, based on analytically what works out best or how the software models, you know, what works out best, but also just, you know, for giving people a chance to build momentum for themselves, you know, for not pinch hitting for them after they've hit a homer and letting them just ride out a positive game and take those vibes into the next day. It's, you know, I think that having someone who is maybe a little more, has some more connectivity along those lines is going to be what they're looking for. And yeah, when he says, you know, there may be some people that I bring in that wouldn't quite be as concerned about stepping into an unstable situation where your president of baseball ops is essentially entering the, you know, lame duck year on his deal. He said maybe some of those issues aren't quite as important to candidates because they're candidates that I've worked with before and that I know. And hey, he worked with Stephen Vogt before, you know, in Oakland. So, you know, I think they're going to probably have some candidates that will surprise you, some that, you know, represent different sort of paths that they could take. But I think that most of them are going to have that quality in common where they're personable and they're relatable and, you know, they can be people who recruit free agents well, because, you know, I think that there's a lot of tacit acknowledgments that, you know, the Giants are a little bit of a harder sell now than they have been. And not just for position players, which has always been the case, but maybe for pitchers a little bit too.
Yeah, no, this all tracks. And when you're talking about what do the Giants need from a manager in 2024, and it's not about strategy anymore. Like, that's not what you're looking for in a manager necessarily, because it's all kind of just funneled into this general idea of you don't want to give up outs, you don't want to do this, you want to not grind your pitchers into dust. There are so many commonalities now between all the managers. This isn't 2002 where you're like, this manager's heard of on base percentage, my God. You know, it's not like that anymore. So what are you looking for, and what do the Giants need specifically? And to me, the number one thing is like, guy who's going to make rookies feel comfortable. That to me is the number one goal for the Giants, is to get someone who can foster that next generation, put them in positions to succeed, make them feel comfortable, tough love when it's called for. That's what the Giants need more than anything else. And if they can get that with someone who is maybe a better face of the franchise, someone who's a better, has a little bit more charisma, someone who is more of a genial sort of fella, that is the package deal. And that sounds like Stephen Vogt to me. I don't want to just put a pin and say, that's my guy, I've made my decision, because I have no idea what goes into the stuff behind the scenes. But those two things, just talking to the media, making the fans at ease, but also getting those rookies into a situation where they can emerge and blossom into veterans.
Yeah, and you know, the other name that Farhan Zaidi actually did drop was Pat Burrell. And Pat Burrell has been in the Giants organization as a scout, as a roving hitting instructor. And, you know, I have not talked to him. I don't know if, I mean, we know that Buster Posey is not going to sign up to be the manager of this team and be sort of beholden to a 162-game schedule. I mean, he retired for a reason, and his, you know, he wants to spend more time with his family, which, you know, is obviously has a lot of demands and is a very young family, and that's his deal. You know, he's going to operate and contribute as, you know, an owner and a member of the board and put in his two cents, and I think people are really going to listen to him. But I don't know if Pat Burrell would want to sign up for everything that goes into being the manager and the ways that you basically you hand over your life to that job. But if he did, you know, he's a guy who really knows all the young players in the system very well. He's been a big advocate for some of them, including Luis Matos. And I just go back to 2010 and how much that team changed the moment he arrived. And that team was not a perfect team. That team was not a juggernaut. They were in fourth place at the All-Star break. You know, they were sufficiently desperate for an outfielder, someone who could hit for some power, that they picked him up, you know, on a waiver claim or basically as a free player after he'd been released by Tampa Bay. And from the time he showed up, it's like they all of a sudden they were more professional. They were more confident. They had that swagger. And you know, a lot of players told me at the end of that year when they won the World Series that Pat Burrell did a lot to change that team. And I think about what you need in a manager, and it's got to be someone who, as you say, I think that's a great point you make about imbuing young players with confidence. It's also having presence and having, you know, being someone who can command that kind of respect. And I think that Pat Burrell could do that. And also someone who, you know, understands the game, understands the modern game, but also understands players and knows when to push back, you know, and is confident enough in himself to do that or to offer, you know, a sort of a dissenting voice when sometimes if you're maybe a little more conflict averse, you wouldn't do that. So I just think that mentality checks a lot of boxes. And again, I don't know if Pat Burrell would be interested in it. I don't know if he'd be a candidate. But he's a name that Farhan Zaidi did drop the other day, and he is in the organization. So I wonder if that'll be even a conversation that'll be had.
One of my favorite Pat Burrell experiences was being in the press box in Scottsdale in 2012, I believe it was. And just I'm doing my work, and behind me I hear, "What the F is ERA plus?" And I turned around, it was Pat Burrell, and he was in the press box, and he just looks like, ERA plus. And then I was sitting next to Jeff Sullivan, formerly of Fangraphs and now working for the Rays, and Jeff Sullivan calmly explained ERA plus to Pat Burrell. Still my all-time favorite interaction. And, you know, to his credit, he kind of, you know, gave like, okay, I see how that might work. So that's like my one Pat Burrell story. I don't know. I really don't want him to, like, search Twitter for my Pat Burrell mentions. He just needs to stay far away from any jokes I've made on Twitter about him and that sort of thing. But, yeah. That's what you need. You need gravitas. You need someone who can be light, but also be firm. And yeah, that does check a lot of boxes as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that, Pat Burrell's obviously the choice to be the next manager of the Giants. He's never managed before. But I think a lot of those qualities are qualities that that they'll be looking for and probably would serve the Giants very well in their next manager. And I think once we find out who the manager is, we'll probably have a much better window into just how games are going to be managed next year. And then, you know, it'll be obviously the next big sign will be, you know, who the players are that they're going to go after. I mean, if their highest paid player is once again a left-handed DH that can't hit left-handed pitching, then you're going to know how they're going to run games next year. But yeah. If they make more well-rounded choices, if they really do, you know, clear the decks for some of the young players while supporting them with people who are everyday players who, you know, really can, you know, play to the ninth inning of every game, then, you know, I think that maybe we'll have an idea that the games maybe run a little bit differently next year.
Yeah, not to belabor the point, but just to go back with how the managerial position has changed. If you think about the evolution of Dusty Baker, right? What was Dusty Baker like when he was a manager of the Giants versus what is he doing now? And he's a very different manager. He is, you know, all of the old bugaboos that people had about Dusty Baker, whether it was bunting and small ball and using his pitchers and running them into the ground and too many pitches, like that's all gone, man, because it's gone from everyone. There isn't a manager around who's doing the old school stuff like they used to. Dusty Baker adapted, and he adapted very well. He's been an excellent manager in Houston. So that's, you might see some names of guys who have been around before, you know, obviously not Dusty Baker, but guys that maybe you're thinking are old school, or maybe they're an old dog, you can't teach new tricks. I just don't think that's true when it comes to the managerial position anymore.
And, you know, the other thing is if the Giants really do get back to their soul, I think it's always been very, very important to them, you know, especially in, you know, the Peter McGowan years, you know, when they had Dusty and had to replace him. I mean, they went with Felipe Alou. And so they went with someone who was respected, someone who had Giants ties, you know, someone who would really fit right in with the DNA of the franchise as they saw it at the time. And when Bruce Bochy replaced Felipe Alou, I think it was a little different for some folks because Bruce Bochy didn't have any Giants ties. He obviously knew the division very well. He obviously was the right choice, we know now in retrospect, but, you know, he wasn't the most exciting choice at the time. And I think a lot of it was because there wasn't an instant connection with him the way it was with Felipe, the way it was with Dusty, and then obviously Roger Craig before that. And, you know, the Giants fired a manager with something left on his contract for the first time in 38 years.
Wow.
I mean, it's the most volatile position maybe in pro sports, and the Giants somehow made themselves sort of immune to it for the better part of four decades, which, you know, there's nothing special or you know, exceptional about the Giants franchise in that regard. They just had a good run of very stable managers that connected with fans, connected with players, and obviously had, you know, a lot of stature. And, you know, I think that it probably is going to be important that the Giants, you know, hire somebody who isn't just, you know, a rando and someone who does have a connection to the fans. And I don't know if Stephen Vogt would qualify. I mean, he's just starting his coaching career. He's obviously known much more for his time in Oakland than San Francisco. But, man, everybody who has an interaction with Stephen Vogt, I think, is left, you know, with a positive impression. He's just such a positive person. You know, he's a funny person. You know, I think he's very prepared, very diligent. I've seen some of the videos from some of his camps that he's done with kids, and it's like, I want to go to that camp. I'm 47. How much is it? I'll write you a check right now. That looks like fun. So I just think that, even though maybe Stephen Vogt isn't, you know, sort of a Felipe Alou type, I kind of think that he'd be really, I think that the reaction would be pretty positive if the Giants hired him.
I mean, what do you think Giants fans, because that's an important part of the equation. What do you think Giants fans want? Do they want someone who's familiar, a name that they want? Do they want someone who's gregarious and charismatic? Do they want just like your typical pot-bellied manager with a Wilford Brimley mustache waddling out and saying, you know, and looking crusty because that's our mental image of a manager? What do you think Giants fans want?
Yeah, they want Tim Lincecum with a towel stuffed inside his jersey.
That's perfect.
Taking the lineup card out. That's what
they
want.
All of the boxes are checked right there.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard someone say, like, Will Clark. And, like, look, I respect Will Clark's contributions to the Giants history. But that's just, you know, word association, basically. Like, you're just thinking of a name of a guy that made you happy once. You know, what do Giants fans want?
You know, I didn't grow up a Giants fan. I feel fortunate that when they won the World Series, it was in my seventh year on the beat, not like my first or second, because it allowed me at least a little time to understand sort of the, I always use this wrong, is it pathos or ethos, whatever it is of the fan base. And so I kind of get what Giants fans want. And to me, what they want is to root for their guys. You know, to have their guys and root for their guys. And I think that there's an understanding, especially now that sort of the thirst has been slaked a little bit by the three World Series championships, although, you know, they're getting further and further away from us now. I think that Giants fans want to go to the ballpark, root for their guys, feel like they have a chance to win, feel like they have a chance to be watching a season that could be meaningful, could be special, could be magical if things break right. But that, I think that's what Giants fans want. And that's the biggest thing that's been missing with the lack of roster continuity. And obviously the last guy just walked out the door, Brandon Crawford. So, the decks are sort of clear now from the championship era. And I think that's going to be the number one thing that the Giants need to do is get some guys that can be, you know, our guys, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's put it like this. Former Giants catchers in franchise history who ended up managing in the majors. You have Bob Brenly. You have Bob Melvin, current and often rumored that the Giants might be interested in him. I'm not so sure about that. You have Mike Matheny. So let me run some names by you other than Vogt. A.J. Pierzynski.
Oh, that was set up so purely. That was
Bobby
so good.
Estelea?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Bobby, why not? Yorvi Torrealba? Yameed Hodd. What's he doing these days? Hey, Yameed. That's you want a job?
That's always such a good pull. I love pulling. I was on foul territory with AJ Przinski and Eric Kratz, and they asked me if I remembered that Eric Kratz was on the Giants, and I said, "Oh man, are you kidding? I'm a Giants backup catcherologist. I like yearn for the days of Yameed Hodd and Guillermo Quiroz, and you know, so those are my bona fides."
Yeah, yeah. And there have been some good ones over the years. Backup catchers are, well, Tim Brown wrote a whole book about backup catchers with Eric Kratz as sort of his main sort of character study, I think. And yeah, there's a reason that backup catchers are, I mean, they move around a lot because they're kind of fungible in a lot of ways. And sometimes they end up, you know, getting sent up and down a lot. And so they run out of options and then they end up getting DFA'd and passed around a bit. But yeah, you know, good backup catchers are just good people generally. And that's why they're in demand, because they're just good teammates. It makes probably more difference to them than any other. You know, being a swell guy is actually a pretty important thing if you're a backup catcher. So, so yeah, you know, it's I think there's a reason a lot of catchers become managers, and they're not always even the star level catchers either.
Do you think the Giants would be interested in like a name brand manager like Bob Melvin, that someone who hasn't just managed before but has been around the block? Like I'm going to stop short of saying Buck Showalter, but someone who's, you know, got a ton of experience, someone who can come in and really bring that experience and have that kind of commanding presence.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Now I'm just sort of, my mind is going to backup catchers. I just had Justin Knadler pop in my head, so I'm completely distracted now. But
yeah, that'll happen. I mean, it's one second you're talking about Steve Holm, and the next second you're off into Trevor Brown territory. So
yeah, Steve Holm actually has turned into a really good college coach. He's
is he really? Where's he coaching?
Yeah, he was at Illinois State, and I think he went to Purdue. Maybe.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, Steve Holm has had a really nice college coaching career. Yeah, let's see. He is the head coach at Illinois State right now. So, yeah.
Okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No, Trey Lunsford. There we go.
Oh, wow. That's a deep pull. Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know why I love just referencing random Giants backup catchers. Anyway, when do you think that there's going to be? It seems like the offseason's on hold until they find someone. That would be my general take on the situation. So this is going to get done sooner rather than later. Would you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the way that it was sketched out is that, you know, as we're recording this on Wednesday the 4th, the rest of this week, they're going to talk to internal candidates. The way Farhan Zaidi mentioned it was one or two internal candidates. I got to think there'll be at least one from the current coaching staff, whether that's Mark Hallberg or Craig Albernaz. Susan Slusser reported that Craig Albernaz is going to be a candidate for the Guardians job in Cleveland as well. Kai Correa, obviously, as the bench coach, would be the number one coach on the staff. So I don't know if he would merit an interview or not. And they're going to have to decide how many of these coaches they hope to keep or hope to retain. You know, they lost Brian Bannister. So, you know, would they really prioritize trying to find a way to keep Andrew Bailey and JP Martinez and try to keep some of their pitching infrastructure in place? Because if they don't, they're going to have to rebuild all that and find new people. So, you know, yeah, I think that the rest of this week they'll hammer out their internal candidates, and then they're going to put out their permissions next week. And, you know, there could be a candidate or two that is in the postseason right now, and they're going to have to obviously wait a little bit. And then, you know, we'll see if they have a, you know, an off day in the middle of the postseason schedule when they're allowed to announce something. Maybe we'll be hastily called to the dugout at the ballpark for a press conference. It's going to be a Zoom. We're just going to Zoom it. But I assume that by the time free agency starts, they'll have somebody in place, and you know, they've said that's going to be important to them.
What do you think about Ron Wotus? I've heard some chatter. Do you think that the fans would respond well to Ron? I mean, I know they would, but would that get fans excited? I guess would be my larger question.
I don't know. I think it probably depends. I mean, I never want to assume that fans are a monolith, you know, even though it's pretty easy to refer, you know, to reactions as being a little bit more, you know, big thumbs up or big thumbs down. I think there are some fans who would really welcome it because they want to return to, you know, maybe a little bit more of a traditional style of baseball. And I think that they probably could have a better expectation of seeing that with a guy like Ron Wotus. And there may be other fans who want someone who is going to be a little bit of a better blend, maybe, of the new school and the old school. I think Ron would be a little more of the old school. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't be quite as hand in glove with the analysts across the office. But, you know, he's also someone who is able to use and process new information, too. So, but I think if Ron Wotus is the manager of this team, he's going to do things his way. And he would be pretty forthright about that. And so, you know, there certainly would be some healthy, I guess, sort of back and forth with how they want to, you know, write out lineups or pinch hit or use players. So I don't know. I'm not sure if it would work or not. The reason I mentioned him a while back was because I just figured it was going to be tough for them to hire a manager when their president has 1 year left on his contract. And you're probably not going to get somebody who's in demand and certainly, you know, maybe not give them, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal or whatever. When you're stepping into a little bit of an uncertainty in terms of, you know, one more really bad year and they could clean house in baseball operations. So I assume that they would want someone who would be willing to take the job for just a year and then sort of see how it goes. And, you know, maybe Ron Wotus would be willing to do that. I don't know. You know, obviously he's wanted to manage for a long time, but I don't think he's necessarily willing to step into any situation. Sure. It's got to be something that he'd feel good about. And so, you know, they've got a lot to figure out, and I don't think that they can really close any doors at this point. They have to sort of look at different people and how they might fit, and not only pass, you know, muster with Farhan Zaidi, but be able to pass muster with Larry Bear and with Buster Posey and with Greg Johnson. And I'll tell you what, there was a lot of skepticism over Gabe Kapler's hiring after the 2019 season, and Farhan Zaidi convinced everybody that this is the right guy. And I think that if there is that skepticism that exists this time around, I don't know if it's going to be so easily brushed off, you know, because he sort of had his pick over any objections or concerns. So I don't know if he's going to have that kind of latitude again.
That makes total sense. I'm going to think outside the box here. Trade for Mike Trout, make him player manager.
I mean, how much of the contract will the Angels eat? Because that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And I think the Giants could afford it. So that's a topic maybe for the offseason. But it's fascinating. I don't know what the Giants can do this offseason to make this a team where you're looking at it going, oh, heck yeah, that they're pretty clear favorites for at least one of the three wild card spots. I just don't see it. I don't see it in free agency. You know, even if they get Ohtani, which they probably won't, I just don't see how this team becomes the, oh, yeah, that's definitely a contender. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating. And I think the manager is going to walk into a little bit of a tough spot, but the number one goal is going to be help foster a roster that can be sustainable, that can be familiar, that can have some continuity, and that, you know, get Marco Luciano in there and figure out the best way to manage Marco Luciano and Luis Matos. And I'm assuming that Wade Mechler will be on the up and down because he's going to have he's going to have options. That's the manager's job to me. So I just don't know who's going to do that well. I'm assuming that the Giants are going to try and figure it out.
So let me see. If I sort of sketch out an offseason for you, what if the Giants sign Cody Bellinger, they sign Matt Chapman, they sign Yoshinobu Yamamoto, they, let's say they sign Rhys Hoskins, right? And maybe they let a few other players go. And they trade some young pitching for maybe a young flashy infielder or something. And they tender Mike Yastrzemski, they tender Austin Slater, maybe they even tender J.D. Davis. You know, obviously, they don't have roster space for everybody, but would that team excite you? Do you think that team would have a chance?
Yeah. I mean, and again, I think the Giants have a chance next year for sure. They could have, you know, Keaton Wynn could blossom. There's a lot of paths, a lot of sliding doors that could make the Giants, you know, not just contending for a wild card spot, but doing something maybe even a little bit more. So I don't want to make it seem like I'm pessimistic, but as far as just on paper, you're looking at it going, oh man, they nailed it. They nailed it. And that's the team to beat. What you presented, yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, you know, you've got that top level starting pitcher, to match with Webb, and you're assuming you're going to have Alex Cobb back. That would track. I think there is a path to that. I don't know if there's going to be a path where you expect it, though.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing is a lot of the position players that are out there are Scott Boras guys. And for the most part, you know, if you're a Scott Boras client, whoever offers the most money generally is the team that ends up with the player. And so even if we talk about the Giants and, well, they've lost some of their free agent luster, they need to, you know, be a little more convincing that they're a good landing spot, that they're still a marquee franchise, all this other stuff, you know, the way you bridge that gap, just offer more money. And, yeah, and then offer a little more than that to offset the California taxes, because you're going to have to do that. But, you know, so, and I know Dave Fleming does not like to hear about California taxes, but they do exist. You do have to pay maybe a little bit more if a team's got, a player's got leverage. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, at least you think, well, these guys are all Scott Boras clients. That's a bad thing. That may be a good thing for the Giants, because you just have to offer the most money, and then you can bridge any other gaps.
Yeah, I'm going through and trying to figure out what they could have done last offseason to prevent what happened this season. And spoilers, there wasn't a ton, right? The real errors came with not going over the top and beating out the Phillies for Bryce Harper. The errors were not going after Zach Wheeler and really just asserting themselves in that conversation. Gerrit Cole being in those positions where you have the money and you see a player that's probably worth the money, not just giving them a little stupid money, right? The Giants are trying to be smart money. They just needed to be a little bit stupid money when there was an opportunity. So that's the real issue. And I think they've learned that. I would like to think they've learned that lesson. It sounds like when you're hearing Zaidi talk that, yes, maybe this is the season that we give stupid money. They gave stupid money to Carlos Correa. You know, his ankle just had termites in it.
And I think that Cole wanted to go to the Yankees. Sometimes you're just going to be up against it. But, you know, Kevin Gausman to me was, I mean, he wanted to come back. And he's a very good pitcher. And he, I think, would have been worth the contract. And you know, you don't know. I remember thinking when the Rangers spent like $1 billion on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. I'm like, what are they doing? They're going to hamstring their franchise for half a decade when these contracts don't work out. And you look up, and there's Bruce Bochy blasting himself with champagne, and they obviously, you know, had a great year and were the best team in the American League for the first half of the season, and are in the postseason and already lead their playoff series. So, you know, sometimes you don't know, and a lot of times these free agent deals don't work out. Most of the times they don't, but, you know, those two deals changed that franchise, and maybe those are the kinds of deals the Giants needed and were in position as a franchise to make. And, you know, they operated short term. They wanted to keep, and I give them credit for this. They didn't know who was going to emerge from this farm system. They had a year of no minor league baseball, which everyone dealt with, right? But it delayed them sort of knowing, okay, we need to keep these avenues clear for these young players. We don't want to block them, the ones who really look like they can be contributors. And they needed time to figure that out. And I think now they're probably at a point where they have a better idea. And so, you know, maybe it is time to spend some stupid money. The problem is there's just not a lot of people to spend it on.
Yeah, horrible offseason for stupid money. But I do think you're right. People say, I get a lot on Twitter like, oh, the Giants have had five seasons to rebuild this. And it, man, farm systems are weird. You take over a farm system with a bunch of teenagers, and it's going to take some time to hash all this out. This season, that is the number one positive from this season, is that they have a little bit more information with which to play. So, I think that's going to be, you know, what's important going forward.
And we're over time, but I just want to layer on one more point, because I've heard people say, well, what has the Farhan regime done internationally? It's like, well, hey, look, Marco Luciano was signed, you know, long before Farhan Zaidi started, and he's just debuting this year as a 22-year-old. Same with Luis Matos. And these kids are, they're signing sort of off the books sort of agreements when they're sometimes 13 years old. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's not like you should be looking at the first international signing class 5 years later. It's more like 7 or 8 years later. So I don't think we have any idea just how much they've inputted to their system from an international standpoint. And I don't think we will know for a couple more years, although Rainier Arias does look pretty impressive. So, you know, that's just another thing where the jury's still kind of out a little bit.
The Braves signed Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies in 2014. Like, it takes time, you know?
Yeah.
All right. This has been episode number 246 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. We will be back. Boy, I don't even know when we'll be back. We'll be back. Will we be back next week?
Believe we're shifting into an as-needed basis. So probably, I would imagine, we'll have some reaction to the manager hiring the next time you'll hear from us.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back to talk about AJ Pierzynski and what his plans for the team will be. We will see you then. Thanks for listening.